Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. This week, we're excited to have Makeda Brown, a seasoned leadership optimizer and executive coach from PVR Coaching and Consulting, join us. Makeda brings a wealth of experience from her background in HR and executive coaching, focusing on helping leaders and teams maximize their potential and drive significant results. In today's episode, you'll discover, first, the power of how. Makeda emphasizes how the processes and interactions with the team can significantly impact its success. Second, the conductor analogy. She explores the role of leaders as conductors who orchestrate the strengths of their team members to achieve harmonious success. And finally, self-sufficiency in leadership. Makeda emphasizes the role of coaches in equipping leaders with the tools and strategies necessary to navigate challenges independently, fostering a lasting impact on their leadership capabilities. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Makeda Brown. Makeda is a leadership optimizer and executive coach, and she's with PVR Coaching and Consulting. So I'm excited to dive into all things coaching, but also so many other topics around the field of teamwork today. Welcome, Makeda.
Thank you, Dane. I'm excited to be with you today.
You bet. For the benefit of our listeners, perhaps you could share a little bit more about your story and how you came to be doing this work.
Absolutely. So I started my first chapter in the field of human resources, where I was really drawn to appreciating the journey of organizations through the lens of people. And so it was a great opportunity to be at the table in terms of really understanding our business strategy while really crafting what that means for the people journey. And through that experience, I really appreciated the criticality of the role of leaders, recognizing you can be a leader of people and you can be a leader in your day-to-day in any capacity, not solely tied to title, but recognizing that I had an opportunity in my own kind of altruism, which I would say is one of my top values, is to really help leaders succeed. And so that's where the leadership optimization comes from, setting leaders up for success as they're working through people to bring great things to the world.
Neat. And you started doing this leader optimization while you were still in the HR role, or did that come about as you moved into coaching?
That came about as I moved into coaching. I would say my HR background gave me a lot of rich scenarios, right? How do leaders lead through change? How do people experience change? What does that look like when we're doing that as a team? How do we also check in and where we are from a self-awareness standpoint, while also driving some of those elements that are key to getting to the future state or where we're going in terms of a success, hopefully at the end of that. So having that as like a rich ground for knowing the reality of it, but then being able to support leaders more directly, and that has really been a part of my journey.
So. Neat. That makes a lot of sense. I'm excited to dive into that, but maybe you could provide a little bit more clarity on what was it that drew you to jump out of the HR leadership role into coaching? Was that a particular moment in time or an observation?
I will say it was part of my own personal transformation. And so I hope this will ring true for many of those listening today, but I lost my own voice, kind of didn't really pay attention to myself along the way. And I was feeling stuck, asking myself, you know, how can I add value, or why am I not finding that natural connection? And so it allowed me to start to explore, like, when am I at my best? What do I really need in that regard? And coaching came to me, I will say, as a very logical approach of adding to my toolkit as an HR professional, but more as I became a student of that, but also someone to experience working through the challenge of feeling stuck and reclaiming your voice. I found bringing those elements together, right? The experience of working with leaders, partnering with leaders from an HR standpoint, it was a natural transition to then be able to bring that back to individuals as an executive coach. But I will say my own personal transformation, right? That increased confidence, that excitement to explore possibilities, the opportunity to really consider those things that sometimes derail us, judgment and things like that. It's my own journey through that I really saw that value. And if anything, I wanted to do more for leaders in that respect. And being a coach has really opened that up for me.
The judgment word is an interesting one because we had a guest on the show a couple of weeks ago and we talked about self-limiting beliefs and imposter syndrome and all of these things that are so real for so many leaders and maybe are even exacerbated in today's age of the way we work. How did you find that yourself or did you find that through working with a coach of your own or how did that start to come to bear?
Yeah, so I would say two parts of that, you know, for myself in receiving coaching, right? So I had to walk through what was the story I was telling myself around many things, including how I was judging myself as well as others and making sure that I appreciated those limiting beliefs, which might be an obstacle to what I really wanted or were costing me in things that I wasn't able to access in my own journey. As well as I think about that as a coach, like that's a part of the how of being an effective coach, right? Really preserving that judgment, giving a keen eye to engaging people from the place of strength or with grace when we think about their gifts. And we all have, you know, pluses and minuses to things that we would say we could do more of or how we can leverage those strengths better. So I would say both in practice, but also in my own growth, it was something that I really appreciated in more. And it's a journey. So I will say that we're human beings. We know our neuroscience often puts us in that space of judgment. So it's something I continue to work on.
Yeah, it is. It is. No, I'm glad you raised that. So when you made that move in, you were starting to go through your own personal transformation. You said, wow, it's time for me to go and start bringing this to a lot more people. Where did you find that you focused in? You come out of the life sciences industry, I think, from your HR career. Were you predominantly coaching in that realm or were you multi-industry?
It was a natural connection to that because I had spent about 13 years in life sciences as an HR leader. But as well had touched technology as part of my journey and food and hospitality. Again, interesting differences when you think about the journey of those industries over the several years. Yeah. And I will say what was very interesting, I really started to go deep into coaching just as the pandemic was starting. Mm. And so when I think about how we navigate change, right, it was a great opportunity to really be in the place of service to folks during that time. Yeah. And, you know, helping them to, again, think about what might they need to do differently with the current realities. And again, if you think at the beginning of 2019, none of us really knew what reality was truly going to be. It was constantly evolving, but really giving ourselves the space to think about how we flex. And I think as leaders, that's an important element, like knowing who we are, what we bring to the table as leaders. And where are the things we need to be aware of that would say in flexing, how do we leverage others? How do we pour into ourselves to grow and learn? But really, particularly at the beginning of the pandemic, it was really important to meet people where they were. And so elements like leading with empathy, leading inclusively, helping appreciate where people are in their change journey. Those were things, again, I think in my industry experience, but also in having, I would say, another real life reality for all of us to work through, to be in partnership with leaders and teams in how they were facilitating that.
Yeah. And knowing where people are in their journey became very difficult in COVID because everyone all of a sudden gets pushed out remote. And it felt like we almost started doing more work all of a sudden, particularly anyone in the HR field. Mm-hmm. You were now being called upon to save the organization, keep the team productive, engaged. And so there was a huge demand placed on everyone.
And I would say both HR leaders, they really were showing up in ways where they had to be heroes in those moments in terms of how can you still inspire others? How can you continue to be humble or bring some humility to say, I'm struggling and you're struggling and how do we still work together in that regard?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you'll notice that was all about the how, right? I'm not saying there weren't great examples of the what. Because I'm very much appreciative of companies that went through that period and continue to thrive and continue to reinvent themselves. But the how of that, right, both as an individual and a team, were really tested through that life experience.
Yeah, let's dive into that, Makeda. I know before the show, you and I were saying, what is the hope for the future of teams? And you shared with me that in this dynamic, complex, kind of high-pressure working world that so many of us live in, that you hope that more teams would be connected to the how and what of their work. Maybe you can share a little bit more on why that's important, why you've seen that emergence of individual and team connection to those elements.
Yeah. So I think the how is really when you think about we are humans in this experience of being on a team. So how well are we connected? What do we know about each other? But also knowing ourselves collectively, I think, is a critical element of a team. And what I have enjoyed even in my own experiences is you often can come into a team, bring your strengths, and actually know that there is someone covering you, or the term of someone having your back. It's recognizing within a team you have everything you need as long as we know each other well and engage in the how, right? We are, the how speaks to why are we here? Why do we exist? The how speaks to what do we share when we have precious time together, and recognizing in many industries that's a challenge, right? Leaders are leading teams, leading global initiatives, leading change, et cetera. Time is a precious commodity, but when we are together, how do we bring our best to focusing on those things that are critical? There's more to the how, but I often say that becomes a real foundation to then what we deliver, right? What we then bring back in terms of contributions to the organization. When you think of teams that are teams of leaders, leaders themselves, and they're leading sub-functions or sub-departments, they also need to take that forward into their organizations. So that element of alignment is critical, that element of continually looking to discuss and determine, are we on the right track, are we not, and that flexibility of adopting. So there's more I can say there, but I think of teams really addressing both parts, keeping those elements both in balance, and then that becomes, again, a bit of a recipe for success.
I like that. And I like the use of the word recipe. That's been a big theme of a number of conversations we've been having lately, which is when you get to work, there are so many ingredients and people aren't really thinking about how they could reconstitute those ingredients. They're just a lot of people are living very task-driven now. They're jumping from one video conference to the next, or one spreadsheet to the next, or one item to the next. And sadly, that isn't always human, and we're often overworked, and we're focusing on our own efficiency rather than the effectiveness of the team and those around us.
Exactly. And I mean, think about a team, again, any team in our life. I actually, you know, in my younger ages, right, I love the experience of a team and through sports as an example. Yep. But having the ability to know that we're doing something together often makes the result even sweeter.
Yeah.
Right. You know, my sense of pride is increased. I'm engaged along the way. And these sentiments that I'm mentioning, many companies desire to sustain that, right, through their teams, through the ways in which leaders are driving that, because there's always going to be something around the corner that is going to be that surprise, curveball, whatever you might call it. And knowing that our teams have that foundation to be able to be put in any situation is really important.
It is. I think that ties back to what you said earlier about when you've got that collective awareness, you know who's got your back and whose back you have. And that there's something very magical that comes from that, that the sum is greater than the parts when that's truly understood and believed and people feel like they belong there.
Absolutely. And it is interesting from a individual experience in a team, it's choosing that.
Yes. Right?
Making the choice to give thought to how we're engaging in ways where our collective sum is greater than our individual parts.
Yeah, yeah. I had down here in the introduction, you mentioned that one of your personal values was altruism.
Yes.
And I'm hearing a lot of that come through here in the how of a team as well, you know, helping each other, knowing how to help each other, knowing how to help the customer. Is that just a coincidence, or is that something that you're finding on your journey of the way that you like to find leaders that you coach, that helping is a big theme?
So I will say it's what I have come to appreciate in terms of my own authenticity. And I'll share a little bit about my personal background.
Yeah.
I was born here in Connecticut in the northeast of the U.S. But interestingly enough, I have the nickname, my brother and I have the nickname as being the Yankees in the family. So we were the first Black Americans born in a family from the Caribbean. So my roots are in Jamaica. And when I think about that, right, I would say whether it's the motto of the country, out of many, one people, that theme was always in my mind. But also from the experience, if you think about immigrants and in various experiences or just the experience of other, I did find it was really important to be sure that I could mitigate those experiences that made the feeling or the benefits that we get from teams, mitigate them in terms of the barriers, right? So not having the experience of other or the loneliness that comes with that. And so I would say in my younger ages, I would have said I am someone who fights for the underdog. But uh-huh. Now in my maturity and in my profession, that's the altruism, I would say, where it comes from. It's my real desire to help people on their path, setting them up for success as leaders and then, of course, as teams. And I, if anything, it may be reveal also that I appreciated my own awareness. I don't have all the skills that are necessary. But what I do know my strength is helping people who are really gifted doing their best. And I would say one of the reasons I was in the life sciences industry so long is that I played a small role to support people who were bringing the best to improving lives for patients.
Yes.
Or in the hospitality space, playing a role to enable really capable people in bringing joy and fun and entertainment to their day-to-day, connections to their family. And then similarly in technology, opening the possibilities, particularly in how we recognize technology is such a critical part of our lives day-to-day.
Yeah. And even in food you and hospitality, there's a whole realm of service. I listened to a podcast the other day that said that hospitality historically was when a stranger walked into your village and you were living very insularly, that you would make your home open to them. You would feed them, you would listen to their stories, and you would learn and share stories, because that other person coming into your living environment, your community, was bringing so much value.
And Dane, that resonates with me so much, because I would say what my Caribbean roots always showed me, those were the examples I saw. If we had someone visiting, my parents offered their own bed, right?
Yeah.
Being whatever the best that was available, that was something that we offered to others to make that connection. And how great if we could have similar thoughts and how we have that feeling as a part of a team.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a powerful part of teams. And, you know, going back to your opening statement around people being connected to the what and the how of their work, I think we're going to see more and more in the years ahead that teams are actually vehicles. They're not a body that's going to forever be one. A team is a vehicle where people are going to pass through and learn, you know, what their strengths are and how they like to help people and where they want to go. And we're going to see more of that passing through osmosis almost.
I agree. It's interesting because we know that's true. Teams will form, reform. And what if we thought about teams like that? The space where we have that opportunity to continue to welcome people, to wish people well, which I always think about the teams that I look back on that were amazing. Yeah. I continue to wish them success. But we are always in that space where together we're forming something, we're engaging, we're contributing something of value. And that being something that would be the thread that carries us even longer in our own individual journeys.
Yeah, I love, and I really like that welcome and well-wishing element too.
Yeah, and wow, as a leader, you get to help with that.
Yeah, you do. That's a really good segue to diving into a little bit more of the work that you are doing with the leaders. So when you are coaching a leader and you're helping them to create that right sort of chemistry recipe of the team and the way that people are working together, how do you know when you've found a leader who's committed to do the work, the transformation? Because that growth comes with resistance and pain and change. Like, how does that play out for you?
Yeah, so to be honest, we as coaches, we get the opportunity to create that safe space for that honesty, right? That candor. Yeah. Sometimes, depending on where the leader is, that might be what is really clear and present and top of mind, right? So they'll start there. These are my pain points. These are the challenges. And then I like to shift to what would you hope for? What would you hope for from this team? If you woke up 6 months from now, 12 months from now, and you had a moment to look back and say, what about this team experience you were most proud of? What would that be? And I often find that leaders answer that question with a lot of care.
Yes.
But to your point earlier, when we're so tied up in the what and we're moving fast, 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 we don't take those opportunities just to pause and say, what am I really hoping for here?
Yeah.
And so often, if I can spend some time in that space, I get the entry point by letting them tell me what's the challenge, what's hard, right? And what would they hope for?
That's cool. And what would be an example of something that surprised you when you were sitting down with a coachee and they said, I hope for this? Is it very varied in terms of the people that you bring? Do you see stuff that's just like, wow, that really caught me by surprise.
So not so much a surprise in what I've heard, because I get the benefit of hearing that from many leaders, but I notice the shift in their energy when they get there. Like I said, many leaders deeply care about their own success and the hope that they are enabling the success for others.
Yeah.
And so they do approach their team role very seriously. Sometimes the fear of doing that right can be paralyzing or limit their ability to appreciate that it is about the team and they're not alone in that.
Yeah.
Right. So you are a leader in creating the opportunity, inspiring the things that would motivate your team, and they are with you in that as well. And so I often offer to leaders, particularly when they are starting with the perspective that this is challenging, this is hard, I often say, lift that boulder off your shoulders, right? Lift the burden a little, because you're not alone in creating that how, right? The hope is not only as a member, you are a member of this team, by the way, as a leader, but then as well, your team is working with you to shape this, right? Everyone has to play their part in the how for us to be proud of an experience that we can all share, whatever form of exuberation when you think about we did something well. Also, everyone plays a role in the how when I mentioned, when we spoke earlier, in where we might stumble, where we might fail.
Yeah.
But not leveraging that as a mark to the team, because still you can say, I'm proud of the fact that I worked with an amazing group to work through this challenge. We weren't successful, but we still grew from this. We still learned something, right? I still would want to be in the trenches with this team, right?
Yes.
Those are some of the things that I think when we give leaders space to really think about that and offer what they hope for in not just the what of what they need to do, but the how and how they want to feel about this team as a member, as a leader, and what he or she would hope, they even would hope for the team members to offer. Those are the things that we typically ask. Like, what would you want, like making it up to Dane, if it was your team, what is one thing you would want your team to say about you, about this experience? Again, with time being so precious, if they're with you for a period of time,
yes,
how are you cultivating that? And that to me is making sure you're giving some share of time to how you're driving that as a leader.
I really like that. That actually reminds me of some work that I'm doing with my coach right now. I like where you started on the fear and the boulder on the shoulder, because often when things get tough, and it's tough for a lot of leaders right now, you actually burden yourself even more. You try and pick up more for the team, which isn't helping you as a leader, and it's not helping your team. Yeah. So the way you shifted from that fear-based, like isolation, procrastination, to more of a faith-based, hey, we're here as a team, we've got this opportunity to do it together, let's really design our how and accept the learnings and the growth along the way. Yeah. That's very inclusive and it's very healthy, because one person shouldn't be carrying that whole load.
And you are better for it as a leader when you come in. Again, enable it. I like to use the analogy of a leader being a conductor. So if you think of a orchestra, your team are all the amazing musicians. They are experts in their own right. They are specifically designed to play or engage in playing specific instruments. As a leader or a conductor, if we're in the middle of a performance, you're not jumping down and pushing the pianist aside and doing the stuff.
Yeah.
Or if you pick another area, right? Or, you know, maybe it's the violins. I love the strings, right? You're not now taking the lead role in that regard. But what your power is how are you conducting, right? The subtle cues, the reminders, the connection to, hey, these members of our team really bring this. And if we could complement that with the other strengths that other members of the team bring, we create what becomes a really great performance. And what I often say to leaders is, the reason that your role is so important at the end of an orchestra, the musicians take a bow and you do as well.
Yes.
You are recognized for that success as well. It may feel like, hey, I didn't carry that whole boulder on my own, but it is by design and you being a leader that you don't have to shoulder it on your own.
Yeah.
I always like a musical reference because it speaks to, again, the abundance that comes from that.
I like it. I feel like we need a t-shirt, Makeda, that says, don't shoulder the boulder.
Yes. Oh, I love that. We're going to have to put that out there. Hashtag don't shoulder the boulder.
That's right. Just put it out there. It'll be available on the Future of Teamwork site, signed by Makeda. I love that. And actually, to me, hearing the way you frame that, it almost gives me an assessment tool to walk through an organization and say, where are my leaders that are clearly carrying a lot of weight? And are they the teams that I need to bring a coach and really start to solve for this kind of bottleneck or overburden of work?
I think that is a great place to check in on, right? And
yeah.
To your point, I think as organizations, we need to look for those spots where we need to pour into others. And our leaders, that can be a symptom of it that we can start to notice and then begin to say, how do we intervene in the spirit of setting our leaders and teams up for success? And that to me is really important, starting with that mindset of how can we make them better? How can we take that burden and make it smaller?
When you see it or when you believe you're observing it, how do you then inquire? So if you're working with the CEO and they say, hey, Makeda, we'd like you to come and coach a few of our executive team, do you go out and sort of do a listening tour or walk the floor, or how do you find those leaders that are most in need of the coaching?
So I will say there's a couple of moments in their journey that I think, as I've talked to CEOs or presidents, that they naturally think there's an opportunity there. So you've just hired someone new and you want to set them up for success. And it may be that because you recognize, and I'm going to offer past experiences where we have unfortunately rejected prior leaders there. The turnover was there previously, and you don't want to lose on this next critical talent decision. That's where I often say there's like a natural instinct to say, how do we set this person up for success? Because we know we haven't quote unquote done it right, or there's something in our system that's making that hard. The other place I would say is also critical for CEOs to think about is the internal transitions, those critical internal transitions. That might be that promotion to the executive leadership level. Mm-hmm. Knowing, and I often think of Marshall Goldsmith's work when he talks about what got us here is not going to get us there. A CEO or president that's keeping in mind that that is a transition that's critical, right? That the person is going to need to flex in a different way to really be successful in that new opportunity. I would say I wish we were doing more of that and earlier potentially in one's progression, not waiting till that step into the C-suite or that the next level within the C-suite. And then lastly, I would say, I often like to ask leaders, like, what's keeping them up at night, right? So when you think about all the things that an organization needs to do over the course of its multi-year strategy, what's the thing that you must win on? What's the thing that you're putting a lot of time on? And if you're putting a lot of time and energy around it, there should be, I often want to say an equivalent, but I know that's not always possible, but an appropriate investment in those who are going to be leading it, the leader and the team.
That's a good formula too, because we see it in so many teams that the high performer keeps getting the big projects. And your idea of an investment as a leadership team sometimes is, let's just throw more reports at them or give them a bigger budget. But the investment needs to be more in their health, their growth, their transformation through coaching.
And Dane, I would say in today's world, there's not often the lever of throwing more resources at it.
True. Right?
We're often having people having to quote unquote do more with less or operate smarter, more efficiently. The leaders needing support in that too, in their own human journey, but as well how they effectively lead that through others.
Yeah. That's an interesting one maybe to pause on, Makeda, which is, why I know we're in a resource constrained environment. It's hard to find good labor. We've had a lot of cost reduction in businesses that scaled hugely through COVID or that have suffered through interest rates. There's lots of economic reasons. But why are we finding that leaders who are being asked to do big transformational projects are so often having to do more with less?
So it's interesting. I don't know that I can completely answer that. What I am aware of is we may underestimate the people element of what we need to get done. I actually don't necessarily always say that the right answer is more people, but the right answer is how do we adopt or engage with our people when we are facing something new and operating more economically, I think is often the place where we can find those opportunities.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I don't know if
it does make sense. It's actually making me kind of dive a little deeper into the thinking there. So underestimating the people element of what needs to get done. If we don't know the how well enough, if we haven't invited enough people to consider the how, well, naturally, we're not going to know how many people are going to do how much level of work over what time frame.
And it's interesting. I think, you know, I'll think of one of the experiences that I have had when I think navigating change is really quick, whether you're merging two companies mm-hmm. or welcoming in an acquired organization.
Yeah.
We're focusing on the deal. We're getting ready for that day one announcement where we say, hey, we've done it. We're now together. This is the new logo. You know, we're happy to welcome blah, blah, blah as part of our family. But I always say the announcement date is not when the work ends. And that's the part that I think sometimes we underestimate. We've identified the opportunity, the challenge. We know this is what we need it to be. The how is, how are we getting people to help us do that?
Yeah.
Right? And to be fair, we're all going to be at different points in our appreciation of that. That's kind of the change journey or mirroring the stages of grief. Like, people are going to experience that differently. It requires us being thoughtful, planful, intentional around how are we bringing people along that journey to contribute to what you're aspiring to for the future.
Yeah.
So the M&A piece is often one that I can point to as an example, because we can actually go to the dollars and cents behind what's the cost of us not taking care of the people element.
Yeah. And actually, M&A is a brilliant case study, because you'll read various studies out there that'll say how many M&A deals fail. And they didn't fail because they didn't financially make sense. They failed because the people didn't find a way of merging their hows.
The culture, absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of great talent leaves. Customers don't have a good experience.
So we can put some intellectual property on this. I think we should be doing more around measuring those change efforts that have not gone well, those transformations that have not gone well, put a cost behind that. And I think we'll start to see more of a comfort around the investment. Because again, if you took numbers that are related to M&A deals not going well, we're talking in the tune of millions, depending, and even higher potentially in certain industries.
Yeah.
The long-term impact that can have in terms of customer confidence.
Yes.
Which, again, that means that dollar value keeps going up. And I would say then the investment feels like an appropriate cost when you think about coaching for a leader or coaching for a team.
It does. Yeah, it does. And that's a big weight to bear, I think, particularly now that we're living through what is clearly a consolidation cycle. There's going to be a lot of companies that are finding organic growth hard, that are finding innovation hard, that are finding new market entry hard. So acquiring businesses is, we're seeing a lot of it right now. It's a big theme. So that's an interesting area.
The investment is worth it, is my little stance on that. But the second piece is, as coaches, we look to set your team up for success in ways that they can sustain that on their own. And so I will say, when I think of my own coaching, my success is, how did I help you do this on your own? I don't want Makita in the room all the time.
Yes.
I want to put you in a place where you are having that same thoughtful reflection, you see it before I would see it in terms of, hey, the how might be a little off. How do we get back to that? But that's a part of this investment that I think I would hope leaders would hope for, that they not only get the benefit of helping a team, but they can put them in a position of sustaining their future success as well.
No, I think that's a good hope. Very good. I guess kind of as we start to round into the tail of this conversation, we've covered some really cool ground here. One of the things that you talked about early on was, as you get closer to your how, you get to learn from it. Tell me a little bit more about how you coach leaders to share the work they do with you as a coach with their teams. Like, how many people really see and understand the work that Makita is doing behind the scenes with their leader?
Yeah, it's a good question. They may not always know the magic of that. And I know you're in this space as well. But what I ask leaders to do, particularly if I'm wrapping up an engagement with them, is let's reflect on what are the things that you tangibly notice that shifted for the team. And if anything, the things that I find that they value the most are the intangibles, because those are the things that will sustain them. Think of teams that may be at their worst state, right? They're really low. The intangible is, at the end of all this journey, in terms of them leaning into the how, they're more confident.
Yes.
They're leveraging their collective superpower in ways that we didn't even think about. And so usually my leaders will tell me, Well, Makita, we started with this and we were really trying to make sure the team was set up well to enable that. They yes. went a step further, right? There was an opportunity that we had not given thought to that arose from us being able to really listen to each other, really have dialogue that was productive, really make sure that we're putting our team first, right, in that regard.
Yeah.
Right? Those are the things that I would say. It's usually the plus ones, that thing that they didn't think about that was both intangible and potentially tangible that really allow, when they go back and tell their peers, that's what I usually find. And someone will call me and I don't know who it is. And they'll say, well, so-and-so told me you did something amazing over there. They can't really put their finger on it, but I'm hoping for this with my team as well. And I love when that's the 6 degrees of separation, right? That other person that wasn't there with you when you start to hear that language come back in a referral, right? I want to talk to you about what I'm hoping for the team. That's when I think I've done my job.
That's powerful. And I like the way that one of your opening questions, what are you hoping for, to the coachee, the leader, turns into the kind of the forward projection on what other teams and what other leaders can benefit from too. So it really lives its way through the whole engagement.
Yeah, but it's their own testimonial that I think often helps in terms of organizations thinking about that. And that's what I would offer to leaders. Let the leader tell you what they found most valuable. I think that's more powerful than any assessment that I could offer.
I like that. It's very human too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So if teams are out there looking to really explore and achieve more, depending on whatever they hope for, then this coaching intervention is a really good way to do that. And what I like about it, Makita, is that it's human, it's lightweight. We're not spending months and months out doing deep research and analysis to say, here are the things that we should do. It can be very organic.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it allows us to, as a team, kind of hold that mirror. And I say, pull it down and tell me what you hope for. And let's work. We will work together to build that bridge to get you where you want to be. So, absolutely.
Yeah. And then a final carry-on question on that is, when you see these questions, these coaching techniques cascade down into the team through the leader, so you're building coaching capacity into that leader. How intentional is that? Is that just a byproduct of the conversation, or do you tend to create exercises and almost guide that leader to have similar conversations with their reports and team members?
I would say yes, because even in the moment of the coaching journey with the team, the leader has a role, right? Not only as a member of the team, but helping to reinforce those elements that are important to the business, that are important to where they're going. So I don't own that completely. I really rely on their voice. I would say that the exercises do lean into the growth mindset. The exercises lean into curiosity versus judgment. And I don't know, I'm quoting this and I wish I always knew who said this, but the quote goes, curiosity is the antidote to judgment.
Yeah.
Right, so getting the team to be in practice there is important.
Yes.
Even in their decision-making, how do they slow down to invite the counter perspective, even if it's not in the room?
Yes.
To inform, hopefully, a better solution, a better answer. And those elements, right? The curiosity, the growth mindset, and just things that they do together that really start to build that cohesion. It also gives the space where I find it opens up the ability to give grace to someone else. And that is so important within a team.
Yeah. And people appreciate that. They appreciate being invited in.
Yeah. So to your point, individually, people feel more included.
Yeah.
Right. There's a greater sense of belonging. It may allow you to connect your values more to what you do versus the assumption that it all just works. No, we're in practice when we're doing that as a team.
Yeah. Actually, practice is another word that really struck me when you talked about the conductor and the orchestra. Like, they can't run out and play an instrument for someone, but orchestras practice a lot and teams don't practice a lot. Teams just show up and do the work. And then they have these moments of practice, but there might be something in that too.
Yeah. How do you make that a regular part of the journey? Right.
Yeah. So maybe the curiosity and the practice are somehow intertwined.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No, that's neat. Well, it's been a super fun conversation, Makita. Yeah, it flew by.
Wonderful.
Just to summarize some of those key points, I liked how you explained your transition into coaching as part of your own transformation and realizing that refinding the voice and refinding your own growth. I think there's a lot of leaders in that position right now. I really like the way that you start by asking, what do you hope for in your team? It's not about the work. It's really more about the outcomes, the hows, the human interaction. And then as we move through the helping and the altruism, the team being sort of not a singular vehicle, but sort of a place that people pass through, and then moving into that great t-shirt slogan around shouldering the boulder and finding those leaders who are taking on too much and helping them unlock and lean into their team, include their team. So much really great material and formula for building great teams.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, thank you so much.
If any of our listeners want to find you, Makeda, and do some work, how do they best contact you or reach out?
My website is pvr-cc.com, or if you're on most social media platforms, it's @pvrcoach.
Wonderful. Well, I'll look forward to staying connected, and thanks again for making the time today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Makeda.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,